It's the show Agent Orange / Adolf Twitler would love to shut down.
So here's the story, folks. I am the least black person that you've ever seen in your entire life. In fact, we did very well relative to racist people.
It's the no bullshit zone.
It's called fake news.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
I know who you are. Just wait.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Oh, Lord, Lord, do we have a program for you today. I swear it's going to be a hot one. We go through the Mueller report, the reactions to it. Did Mueller contradict Barr today? Trump, the Supreme Court, why can't black people go to the park? And so much more as we get into our week in review. First, some introductions are in line. Hi, I am your host, who is absolutely melting in this climate change. My name is Shaggy Jenkins, and we used to have trade winds in Hawaii, where this show is based. You can find me on my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media serve at Shaggy Live. This guy, you can find chilling somewhere around the streets of Chicago, often on the air with other people as a commentator himself. Please give it up for information headquarters for us, Chris Bates.
You have overcome, for I am here. Shaggy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I gotta tell you, this week is one of those weeks where I've literally had to sit on my hands because I'm going, I don't want to respond to this all on social media. I don't want to respond to this all on social media. How's your week been?
Not too shabby. Not too shabby, you know, taking it day after day, you know, and experience after experience. No, you just gotta, you know, live life what it is, you know. And another thing real quick, just before we start, is the fact that I always learn something every day. I try to. And the one thing I've always appreciated real quick is about children. Children really know how to speak the truth, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And you know where a child's coming from if you talk to them. And I think that we should, at times, be more like children and just speak our minds, and you know, not to offend anybody, and you know, not to be, you know, gross about it, but, you know, just kind of, you know, cut loose and see what happens. You know, with all due respect, respect people around you, but the raw honesty, I think we need to get back to that.
Yeah, because this is a week that we can definitely say that raw honesty is sorely needed. Let's jump into our first story, because yesterday there was this whole bombshell press conference that came out with Robert Mueller. And in his press conference, he basically said, I wrote the report. Why haven't you read the report? It's all in the report. I don't need to make any more public comment. Oh, by the way, read the report. What do you think he was trying to tell us, Chris?
Well, not only Shaggy to read the report, but what I got out of it was the fact that this man, obviously, Special Counsel Mueller and his team put 2 years into this production, and from the standpoint of this investigation. And what I got out of it was, it's really up to Congress at this point. He's like, look, take for what this is. One of the quotes he said that was very interesting was, charging the president with the crime was not an option we could consider. And I think Special Counsel Mueller was saying, if this indictment was not a part of the law about charging a sitting president with a crime, if that wasn't there, President Trump would have been charged.
Yeah, and that's just it. It was a mandate put on him by the, the Office of Counsel, the Office of Defense Counsel. It was basically the overseers of the overseers at the DOJ. Right. They said in their memo that essentially it was their belief. This isn't even something that's had its constitutionality questioned in a court. It is right. Our belief that a special counsel cannot indict a sitting president. Now, a lot of people, Chris, took that to mean that this was yet again another case of Republicans trying to go in obstructionism. But, okay, I'm going to sound really weird as I say this. There might actually be a constitutional precedent for keeping the underling of the Department of Justice from actually being able to attack the head of the executive branch. there's always been this constitutional requirement, according to Article 1, that the legislative branch needs to act as kind of the judicial branch of the executive branch should anything be brought up. And no other branch actually has that right. But why are people so angry at Mueller? They feel like he's dropped the ball, don't they, Chris?
They feel that way, Shaggy, because I think they wanted more from Special Counsel Mueller. I think they wanted to get more information. I think Mueller played close to the vest. He didn't tip his hand too much. It's pretty much you have to read it in code, what he was saying. And whatever you took out of you, extrapolate what he was saying out of it, that's what you got from it. Another thing he said was obviously there was Russian interference. So again, not being a Republican and not being a Democrat, let's go with just being an American. As an American, the 2016 election was rigged. It was by Russian influence. So let us deal with the fact. No one wants to talk about that. Everybody is high on emotion and knee-jerk reaction and not the facts itself.
No. And the knee-jerk reaction from a lot of people that were analyzing the events is, wait a minute, Barr told us that there was no way that this report generated anything towards the path of collusion being a thing, obstruction being a thing. The president was, in their terms, exonerated. But what Mueller said, and this is where all the analysts are going crazy, is we did not explicitly say a crime was not committed. And at the end of his whole presentation and press conference, he actually reiterated, hey, just so you know, read the report. And I never said he didn't do anything wrong. I just said I can't try him from my department.
Right.
Will this force the Dems now to harshly reconsider filing articles of impeachment?
They have to. If they really want to use something against President Trump in this situation, they should react immediately. As you know, through Barr, we got the redacted version of this special counsel investigation, which again is like somebody coming in, say, like, for example, you look for work for a publishing company and you have your book, and then the editor comes in and just edits out everything to make it a retelling of a story. Mm-hmm. And this is what Barr has done. Barr has re-edited the whole thing to make it sound good, to make it, you know, more plausible to Republicans, you know, catering to them. And so when you do that, again, it's not fair to the American citizens of this country. What you're doing is placating to one side to protect the president.
Hmm. And it does seem like the placating is very, very heavy in the contrast and comparison between Bob Barr's public statement and Bob Mueller's public statement. When it comes down to definitively what they're trying to say, the report summarized in Bob Barr's, he's saying, look, we found some weird stuff going on. Those investigations have already wrapped up. Case closed. Mueller says, we can't explicitly, thanks to the mandate that we were set up on, say what we really need to say. But the report can lay out the groundwork for the branch of government through Article 1 that is actually responsible for this stuff. Ball's in your court, House and Senate. How likely are we to see action on this now that Mueller has tipped his hat and said, I'm not going to testify?
No, and I don't blame him. First of all, Special Counsel Mueller should really be, you know, commended for, again, 2 years out of a person's life to really delve into this, to go through all the investigation and these layers and layers and layers. And I only could imagine it would consume you, him and his team. So for him to say, look, I step back, I'm retired, went back to the private sector, and really, good luck to him, because he really went through a lot, not only trying to investigate, but insults from the president during this time. And, you know, you don't need the man in the highest office to come at you the way he does, whether it was him making speeches or through Twitter accounts. You know, he was trying to do a job. Let him do his job, what he did. And again, just quote somebody from, you know, all these programs, of reacting to what the Mueller report was saying, there was an announcer on MSNBC, not familiar with his name, but he made a very valid point. He said Mueller virtually announced, Congress, do your job. If you read through all what he talked about, and I got out of that too, I think that, once again, the ball's in the Democrats' court. What do you do with it? Do you set a play? Do you run a pick and roll? Do you go for the high-percentage shot? Do you 3-point? Whatever the game plan is, through House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and everybody else involved, you have to have a set game plan and make sure that everybody's on board to make this game plan work.
Yeah, because Pelosi's plan, and we talked about this, Pelosi has a plan of procrastination and protracted investigation. Whoa, say that three times fast. But the strategy was is that publicly shame the president, shame the administration by slapping down his craziness in the courts time and time and time again in front of the American public leading up to the 2020 season, so that basically by the time we get there, we have a very demoralized, depowered, and in the face of the American public, delegitimized President Trump. But with Mueller coming out and saying, hey, and Chris, you're going to love this. So I'm a big fan of IT t-shirts, right? You know, information technology. I'm a geek. One of my favorite t-shirts says RTFM on it. And what it is our way of telling everybody who always asks us questions about our software, read the effing manual. When it came to Mueller's press conference, I feel almost like we could have had this Clark Kent into Superman moment where at the end he goes, oh, and by the way, pulls the shirt off and it says RTFR, read the effing report. Am I wrong in thinking that he was literally just there to be like, look, my work is done. Where the hell are you?
That's a very valid point, Shaggy. You know, again, when you look at what Robert Mueller was trying to do, it goes back to this basic commonality of taking points away, once again, redacting that Bob Barr was doing. But he was saying, meaning Mueller, look, that's a version of this report. If he wants the real deal Holyfield, read the report and make it as simplistic as possible. So again, when you're nitpicking, when you're taking sentences out or paragraphs to, you know, make sure that once again that everything is all bright and shiny, that this didn't happen and that didn't happen, and let me take this out to once again all this editing, you're getting a version that they want you to read. Don't read that version. Case in point, back in the day when you went to high school or college and you had to read a book, you know, say it was The Great Gatsby, you know, by F. Scott Fitzgerald, and it was a version of F. Scott Fitzgerald, you know, the great Gatsby for Dummies. That was the shortcut version.
Yep, the Cliff Notes.
You want time to read the whole thing. Right, Cliff Notes, right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The fact it's called for Dummies, I was insulted. You know, right. I may be anything, but I won't call myself a dummy. I know it was taken in out of context, but I didn't like it. So I just go and read the book and get it out the way. Nobody wants to read the book. I hope people want to have the passion to read the report.
So essentially, I think I get what you're saying. If a senator or representative doesn't want to RTFR, read the effing report, then they're a dummy? I think I hear that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Look, here's the deal. If you're going to be forward with the American people, quit trying to play games. You know, don't, you know, do something when you say, okay, here's what's good for you and it's not good for you. These are people who vote into office who's supposed to speak for us, and they don't, because a lot of them have their own agendas. They have their own constituencies to look after. So they use us for votes. That's what I always tell people. Do your homework. Find out who you're going to vote for, no matter if it's local or national, whatever. Do your homework and keep tabs on them after voting for them and see what happens, because some people get too acclimated into a position. They forget, you know, about the voters. They come back and want you because they want to get voted back into office. So my point is, if someone that you elect in the office and they give you this version of Global to Report and it's not the real deal, then what are you hiding?
Right. That's a
why we got this
question.
Version and not the real deal one.
I know. And this is the thing. As long as we're talking about hiding stuff, we know that Donald Trump in that report was basically called an obstructionist. And one of the other ways that he's been kind of fighting Mueller up to this point is through the media, through delegitimizing the media, saying things like fake news and their biased reporting. And then he escalated that even more so back before he was a president, saying, oh, God, the media, they're such scum. They're such, you know, what is it? Slime bucket. You know, I wish I could kill them. I can't. But, you know, I would. Yeah, it was kind of one of those moments where did Donald Trump just make a joke about killing the media? And of course, back then, the media just took him as a candidate as saying, oh, God, thank God this guy's not going to be president. Well, the future happened, and here we are with him as the president. And now, this is one of the weirdest things. We were talking about stuff coming back, right, Chris? Eric Holder, under President Obama, as Attorney General, actually set a precedent for Donald Trump having this, let's just call it a 1952-esque Stalinistic purge of the media. For the proletariat, of course. But when we talk about the precedent that Eric Holder set, can we discuss how Donald Trump can actually use Obama to come after us in the media?
Since going back to Obama and the whole birther movement that Trump was a part of, he has pretty much said to the public that I'm going to dismantle and go after former President Obama any chance I get. So this is no surprise. Somehow, like, for example, the whole fake news thing, I thought it was very, very interesting. The side story about Nancy Pelosi slurring her words on a video, and come to find out that was doctored video, that she didn't slur her words. Somebody used a program to slur certain words to make her sound like she was incoherent. And the White House quickly got that video and posted it. But even when it was doctored, they still embraced it. So that really is fake news, if you think about it. And going back to Trump, the whole thing with Obama and Eric Holder, I think that, excuse me for saying this, I think Trump has a hard-on, if he can get one, for President Obama. Because ever since this whole thing started, he went after Obama, you know, going back to the, you know, the White House Correspondents' Dinner and things like that, the whole birther movement. And every time he mentions him, he always in a very negative light when it comes to the past president. So anything associated with Obama, he's going to find a way to be a part of it and to constantly kick Obama verbally in his speeches or if he's off the cuff or off teleprompter.
Yeah, because this all has to do with a story that I was talking about on Monday's program where we discussed Julian Assange. And with Julian Assange, well, here's the thing. Julian Assange is essentially the worst person to put in front of a camera right now and say, this is the hero for free speech. But his case that the Trump administration has designed for him is, dare I say, actually aimed at the greater U.S. media at large. This isn't just a case about Assange, is it?
No, it's not. The president's done a very sad and a very strong, effective way to let everybody know that the media is evil. And again, use rhetoric and words like evil and fake news. It's very hard for these reporters to go out there and do their jobs. Why? Because people, some have bought into it. And that's a damn shame because you don't want to see anybody get roughed up or, dare I say, shot or killed or anything like that. But when you have this high fervor that the president has started, this fever pitch about the media that he hates so much, whether it's Jim Acosta on CNN, which is mostly the main target, and things of that nature, all they want to do is do their job. And they get mad, meaning the president or a White House secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you notice that her job is scaled back. She's not there every day because she cannot do her job. So you put her out there in dosage here and there to make a statement about what the president is doing or what the nation is going through. That's about it. Again, hiring incompetent people who can't do their job and then get mad, we call them on the carpet about certain questions. So anything media associated with Trump, the one thing I noticed with him, meaning Trump, he gets very mad at, whether it's media or about his wealth.
Yeah.
You pack those two things and he's off to the races.
Here's the thing. He knows that the media is not his friend right now because he's up to some shady stuff. Okay. I don't understand why he thinks we would be his friend. However, any kind of measure that he can use to threaten the United States media, he will. And one of the things that I thought was very, very interesting about this precedence that I'm talking about is there was an article out basically saying, hey, here's the thing that you have to understand. We could actually be in the midst of multiple members of the United States media being under secret surveillance without even knowing it, thanks to the precedents that Eric Holder set up with Rosen and Fox News. And that's something that nobody considers. I mean, I didn't think about this, Chris, but even guys like me and you could right now be on some sort of watch list where they're going, what are they talking about? What do they know? And is it bad against the president? Should we be worried?
I'm not worried. I need the press. I need the brand going. You know, if that could make me give me some more spotlight, go ahead. No, but in all seriousness, it's beyond sad because you're dealing with people like Trump has a very thin skin, and he will do whatever it takes to make sure that anybody that's against the throne or against Trump will suffer. Let's go back to the whole thing about, you know, surveillance. I was reading an article about him, how he feels about SNL when they make fun of him, and, you know, Alec Baldwin, mm-hmm. who's done a very successful job at mimicking him. It's a fan favorite for that program. And what happens is that you would think there would be other pressing things to talk about or to go through the president's mind. Oh, I don't know, North Korea. It could be, you know, jobs here in America. It could be import, export, anything along those lines. But no, he's upset of somebody making fun of him on Saturday Night Live. So when that becomes high priority, that should give a wake-up call to anybody across the board. This man is tweeting about Alec Baldwin or whoever makes fun of him, or says anything against him. He can't take it. Very thin-skinned individual. And that is not good for this country because, again, someone that thin skin, we want a president that's strong, not somebody that watches SNL. I mean, you know, going back to SNL's history, it started in the 70s. You had Chevy Chase at the time making fun of then President Gerald Ford, falling all over the place, falling, you know, from a ladder, or falling and tripping and everything, looking at the camera, you know, live from New York, it's Saturday night, and that whole thing. So, look, the president has a job to do. Let him do his job. Do your job. Don't worry about Saturday Night Live or anybody else. But again, so juvenile in his behavior, that should be, a flag for anybody to say, you know what, maybe the president should be working on other things besides tweeting about Saturday Night Live and Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. And the thing is because of this precedence, there could be even those members of that cast under investigation without even knowing it, because Donald Trump basically says they're enemies of the state. And when Eric Holder set up his little, hey, look, if there's some sort of threat to the state security, now you see the weird parallel that going after Julian Assange leads Donald Trump. There is a confrontation coming, two trains on a track, both at head speed. At full speed, one between First Amendment rights and two, the wishes of a president that wants to control his own appearance and reputation in the media. Which one's going to win at the end of the day?
Well, Shaggy, in a perfect world, we'll probably go with the First Amendment, but because we're dealing in strange days and strange times, don't be surprised if President Trump gets his way, especially when him being in power, a horse, you know, going back to the House and Senate, where it was in online for that percentage-wise to back the president. I think, again, despite the rumblings in the Republican Party, we have traditional GOPs and Trumpsters, they're still in power. Mm-hmm. So don't be surprised. They all get lock and step and give the president what he wants. That's scary.
That is very scary because one of his central enablers, I mean, I know we're like a minute away from the break here, but one of his central enablers we'll be talking about when we get back from the break. Mitch McConnell has basically said, look, when it comes to all of this stuff around the president, I'm his guy in the Senate. I'm going to make sure that I shut down any trouble that this guy gets. So if we were to go to the Senate and be like, hey, the president is trying to trample all over our First Amendment rights, there's a good chance that Mitch McConnell could just side with him and be like, screw it, you're right. You have no rights anymore. Is this the safest thing that we should be doing right now with American media?
No, it's not. And I know we're going to put them on break, but here's the thing. The media should be protected because it's the only outlet we have for information, no matter where you come from, no matter what your political leanings are. We need that.
Yeah, and that's just where we're going to have to leave off, because here it is that as much as we need a free and open media in the United States, we didn't really need Julian Assange to be the guy that brought up all of these things, nor did we really expect for Julian Assange to be Trump's gateway to coming after us in the free and open press. Chris, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about Mitch McConnell and Supreme Court abortions and so much more. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Stay close.
Is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. If you missed any part of the first part of our show, don't worry about it. You can catch us at a bunch of different places, including iHeart. You can catch us on Spotify, iTunes. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Or, well, our website, ShaggyJenkins.com. Joining me from the windy city of Chicago and basically just as exacerbated with the news this week as I am, please welcome Information Headquarters, Chris Bass.
Oh, man, thank you so much, man. Always a pleasure to be here, man.
Yeah, man. I tell you, there's nothing more like coming back from a little break and starting off with a light story like abortion, is there, Chris?
Well, you know, somebody got to talk about it, so it might as well be us. Why not?
Yeah, this is the thing that I found so weird, is this week has been so many white men, not me, by the way, so many white men weighing in on what reproductive rights are that I'm starting to worry, Chris, have we completely created a society where women have no voice in their own reproductive rights?
Well, we've seen that throughout the years, you know, throughout decades, and women have gone through a lot to have their bodies belong to them, don't want anybody else. When you have government involved in your life, that's not a life to have, because it's not yours anymore. It belongs to somebody else. Somebody is dictating and telling you what to do with your body. And like I said before, I mentioned this before about the Alabama situation about abortion. I mean, I've talked to women over the years doing interviews about this, where back in the day, you had some women who were pregnant and didn't want to have the child. They call those backdoor abortions. Go to some alleyway and, you know, I'll just, you know, discuss the details, get a coat hanger and things that need to get rid of a baby. Some women, unfortunately, would drink Drano, something poisonous, to destroy the baby. They would throw themselves down flights of stairs to get rid of a baby. Now, again, when you create a healthy hospital environment, you know, healthy environment for that to happen, then there you go. But prior to that, there was nothing like that at all. So when you look at the horrible history that women have, and people going to sit back and say, well, that's not right, they should go full term and give it for adoption. Not everybody has the same mentality. You can't put it on somebody. Let the lady let the woman make a decision if they want to go the full term or not. And again, we look at the horror stories that I just talked to you about, it's come a long way. Of course, you know, Roe v. Wade in 1974. I mean, it still holds true right to this day, because you don't want anybody to tell you that you should do A, B, and C. You don't want to do A, B, and C. And again, these are hypocrites, because there was a senator who had to step down, I think it was last year, because he got his mistress pregnant.
Yeah, I remember that.
Come on. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, this is the thing that really gets me, because I have been trying so desperately hard to figure out what is the United States whole deal, man. Because you look around the rest of the world, and every other place that is a top-tier society, the issue of female reproductive rights, of body autonomy, and of choice, by and large, has been resolved where it's like, no. People is people. You have rights to all your part. The United States, though, and Chris, I'm going to ask you to take a little strange tour with me down history lane. Chris, I'm going to say that the roots of America's anti-abortion mindset actually has Nazi roots. Would you believe me if I told you that?
I would believe that, yes.
Okay, because here is something I'm going to go down a slippery slope with you. All right, so let's take a white GOP main representation that we have as of today. Now, these older guys and stuff are very traditionalist. They're moral people that believe in the sanctity of life. But where did the morality and sanctity of life and all of those arguments actually come from? It's a practice that predates the rise of the Third Reich. It was also the practice that single-handedly led to the final solution and, get this, all the ways that we actually treat minorities judicially to this very day. Chris, it's eugenics. So
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Now, for people that don't understand, eugenics was this whole belief that people used to have that you breed good people together, good things happen. If you find a bad person, or, you know, somebody that's brown, you kill them because we don't want their genes carrying on and bringing with them their quote-unquote deficiency. Well, as such, eugenics also kind of taught that there was a genetic variant between males and females, whereas the female, genetically speaking, was inferior to the man's brain and man's will and man's morality. And if that sounds like a total pile of horse, ooh, can't say that. It is. It is a steaming pile of manure. But Chris, we still use these outdated mindsets that, mind you, have roots in Nazi and racist kind of thinking. We still use those to decide the matter of female reproductive rights here in the United States. Are we as a country just completely lost?
I think we're lost as a people at times in this country, and we're also lost when it comes to the value of the human body. And for example, you know, you have your driver's license, but as you want to donate your organs and things like that at one point, that's entirely up to you. I mean, you know, you're going to be taking a dirt nap, no offense. You know, what are you going to do? But it's entirely up to you to donate your organs. And so you have that right to say yes or no. When you want to donate blood, yes or no. It's entirely up to you. So imagine if you were forced to do that. You know, and again, it's your body. You're not doing anything wrong to it. You just elect not to do it. But again, we fast forward the situation with the abortion rights. Government should, in my humble opinion, stay out of people's lives. Yes, we have laws. Yes, we have restrictions and codes, stuff like that. I get that. That's wonderful. We need those in place. But when you start to put your mind or your governmental power into controlling people, then you're not too far. I said this before on the show, you're not too far from martial law. And I know it sounds cryptic. I know it sounds strange, but if the government on a whole from state to state, whether it's Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, or anywhere else, and they have a percentage across the board, coast to coast, that you can put this law into place, that the government can tell you not to do this. And again, doctors get up to 99 years if they perform this abortion and things of that nature. So it's a very set plan to make sure that the control of the population is intact at the same time. So, because everybody was born, when you're born, what? You don't have a name yet. You have a number. Everybody has a number that they are stamped with from the beginning to, you know, the cradle to the grave. And in between that time, in that dash, what's going to happen in your life? And we're talking about the fact that somebody from the government is telling you, you can't do that. We'll tell you what to do with your body. We have to fight against that.
Yeah, because see, here's the thing that really kind of, like, all of that stuff you said, I can actually summarize it in some very, very scary ways that people don't consider. If you are a dead person, they can't take your organs without your consent. Keep in mind, you're dead. So, in this country, a dead body has more rights to their own system than a living person. A woman in this country has less rights than a dead person in this country. Number two, something else to consider, and this is something that should really just put it all into the Alanis Morissette, isn't it ironic kind of mindset. Ready? If you're a fetus and you're a woman, you have more rights inside of your mother's womb than you will ever have the second you leave it. Think about that. Women have more rights before they're born than they ever have over the course of their life, and they have more rights over their own body after they die than they do during the course of their natural life. I'm just going to throw this out there. Does this make any sense to you?
It makes a lot of sense, because going by the laws that we have in this country, you know, don't get me wrong. When you're talking about establishing laws, I only met it with the forefathers were thinking, trying to project this as a present time into the future down the road. There had to be times where those laws were into place, but who's to say that they cannot be changed? I mean, sometimes you have to go back and say, look, that was good for that time, whatever you want to call it, in that timeline, but now we've had to make some amendments and changes because we're looking at different times, different days. So that's what we'll do with conversation. I think that people who want to be a part of that will be, but you're right. We look at that perspective of, say, you know, a newborn child or a child that's inside the womb has more rights. That speaks volumes, to say the very least.
Yeah. And see, here's the thing. We don't need things like the Dred Scott Act anymore. So why do we really need to concern ourselves with this belief that women's bodies are something that is owned by the state, thanks to our rooted belief in this Naziistic concept of eugenics, instead of going, you know what? The First Amendment says we believe these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Through the elastic clause, that means that all people in the United States are created equal. And if we're equal and a woman can't stop me from getting a vasectomy, you see where I'm going with it. But Chris, will this argument makes sense before it gets to the Supreme Court, because a lot of people are saying, please don't let this one go in front of the Supreme Court.
You don't want to go in the Supreme Court because you have a high percentage of conservatives on the court. I think it's like maybe 5-4-5 that's on there with the new appointment of Kavanaugh there as a Supreme Court justice. Again, you don't want to get to that point, because now we're looking at a Supreme Court ruling, which will be like the finale of the whole thing. Hopefully, other heads will prevail where it shouldn't get that far, where, again, a woman's right to her body should be there. But if looking at that, and it gets to the Supreme Court, and the Republicans on there that are part of the Supreme Court will make that, you know what, that would be a very sad day.
Yeah.
To the very least. It would.
Now, here's something that you have to consider. The reason that we're under this whole Supreme Court system that we are at this current moment is because of one guy and his stonewalling for 421 days, a presidential potential appointee to the Supreme Court. I'm talking about way back in the day of Merrick Garland and then slow living human turtle himself, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell this week basically came out and said, hey, you know what? Ruth Bader Ginsburg ain't looking so well. So I don't care if it is an election year. If the president puts forth a nominee, we as the Senate must confirm them. Doesn't this sound remarkably different from the time that he said my proudest accomplishment was looking President Obama in the eyes and telling him you will not get this Supreme Court nominee?
You know, Mitch McConnell really bothers me. And this is the reason why. Is at times I see him flip-flop, and then he has his strong alliance to the presidency, which I get that. But a Mitch McConnell, when you're talking about justice being served, it's not the justice that you see it. It's be justice across the board for all people. And maybe your vision, Mitch McConnell, is not a lock and step to what should be. And, you know, it sounds more, again, like control. It sounds more again like whatever we do is my way or the highway, as some Republicans have always chanted over the years. And we see it again through McConnell. Now, you would think that in any situation where you're dealing with a high profile issue of a Supreme Court coming into play of any type of situation like this, that it would be taken very seriously. But you're talking about rearranging if Ruth Bader Ginsburg steps down for health reasons or whatever, and you want to make sure that every place is in lock and step, and you want to make sure that she replaced with, say, another Republican to have this the deck really stacked for yourself. That's political football. We don't have time for that.
No, but that's exactly what they're doing. They're playing this game of punt, 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 punt. And the problem is that nobody likes games that are all punting. But this game that McConnell has played, though, with the punting back and forth of whether or not he supports a president or doesn't support a president along their party lines, has drastic consequences when we think about the stuff that could be coming up in front of this Supreme Court. Now, they've already struck down, like, the Indiana Abortion Act this week, but in a weird way, on one side saying, hey, look, the state can't say what conditions that you can do abortions under, but they can still enforce this draconian belief that every time you have an abortion, you have to pay for a full funeral for whatever comes out of you. That is something that is meant to shame and humiliate women. But when the Supreme Court heard it, they basically said, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you can keep that. So it's already showing signs that these guys are siding on the right. And that was Mitch McConnell's plan from the onset, wasn't it?
No, you're right. As a matter of fact, the Planned Parenthood said in a statement about fetal burial provision was an abortion restriction intended to shame and stigmatize women and families. Mm-hmm. He just talked about that, and that's exactly what's going on. Mitch McConnell, again, has an agenda to try to put in these women, quote unquote, on Front Street to show them as an example of what happens when you have this procedure, not only have a proper circumstance, having a funeral. Now, nobody wants that. You know, and I don't know too many women who have gone through this and they have a funeral afterwards. No, they went to a Planned Parenthood or went to a medical facility to do that operation, and then that was it. And a lot of them, of course, do feel sorry or do mourn, but they have their reasons of why. A lot of it could deal with the fact of incest, of rape, and anything along those lines. Nobody wants to get to the whole seriousness of why some women do not want to carry a child to full term. We look at, for example, women who are sexually assaulted or abused. 10 out of 10 times is going to be by somebody in the family when they're younger, when they become a teenager. So you already destroyed that innocence when a creepy uncle or aunt, because women out there are kind of on their level too. I'm going to talk about that, about women. And other relatives, male or female, going after this particular, say this example, a young girl or young boy. I'm talking about girls now because of the reproduction system. And when you do things like that, You have to understand about the whole history, not just the fact that she's pregnant, but why is she pregnant?
I know. And when it comes to Mitch McConnell, he's never had an interest past anything that he doesn't already believe. Chris, I want to jump into a couple of stories before we run out of time. First, did you see the video of the white woman carrying a gun around a national park?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Can we briefly explain to white people that black people have rights to national parks as well?
You would think so. And the lady from, you know, the park district at that time, the park center,
she is no Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec. Okay. That's
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. No, nothing like that.
No.
The couple that was there, the Richardsons, you know, Jessica Richardson and her husband were trying to enjoy a picnic in this area about 12 miles southwest of Starkville, Mississippi. And they're on the Campgrounds of America. So apparently you need a reservation for that. And they didn't have one. So the lady who works there gets out of her truck, comes over, and she has a gun to her side, walking up to them saying, no reservation, you need to go. Now, all she had to do was sand the gun, tell them they couldn't stay there, that would have been the end of it. So Jessica Richardson went to her cell phone, captured everything, you know, viral on the video, but on Facebook to show that all we're trying to do is enjoy ourselves on a Sunday, you know, time for a picnic. And here comes somebody saying you got to leave with a gun to their side.
Yeah.
You know, and again, why the gun? Why not just, you know, talk to the person? I'm sorry. You look, just say you got to leave the property and that's that.
You know, the thing that really bothers me about this is because I am a person that believes in the optics of situations. Can I just say that when it comes to this story, here is, once again, the optics of gun owners who try to say that, hey, gun ownership is for protection. Once again, proving that, no, gun ownership is for you crackers to basically enforce racism. And I'm sorry, but time and time and time again in the news, that's the gun story I see. Now, at what point are we going to get in this country where white people just don't assume, because I have a gun and there is somebody that is not white, I should use it?
It goes back to fear mongering. It goes back to stirring the fact about racism. And it goes back to white privilege. Because some of these viral videos I've seen, the white people holding a gun or a weapon or not pretend, or I'm sorry, not pretend, in their mind, they become the law. What are you doing here? What's your name? You know, let me see your identification. I'm like, you're nobody. You're just a citizen like me, but you give me the third degree. Why? Because you're scared of black people.
Yeah. And that's just it. Because here's the thing. When it comes to scary acts, I'm going to jump to the next story here and just prove how wrong that last story was. When it comes to scary acts, the notorious AOC this week came out and disclosed something that is very, very a scary part of her daily life, and that is opening up a threat assessment folder and looking at pictures of all the people that want to kill her. And the scariest thing about her is she said, it's always men, mostly white, but always men. Is this really the type of country that we live in now, Chris?
We've always lived in a country like this. This is nothing new, unfortunately. When you have men, and this, for example, a white man, they fear power from anybody that's different. Not all of them, but the ones in the situation. And, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a very strong congresswoman. She's very strong. She's very dynamic, very outspoken. And the Democrats need that. They need that new blood to inject to fight back across the guys and gals from the other side of the aisle. But when you get, as she said, a flood of death threats, hateful messages, you do wonder about your life. You do wonder about who's sitting next to you or standing next to you. You will become, you know, very upset. But all you're doing is voicing your opinion. But when people feel threatened, like, you know, these cowards with these death threats, it's more than a notion. You cannot take this lightly. It's very, very serious.
No, and that's just it. When she talks about, like, all of the stuff that people pick on her, with the baseball team calling her a threat to the nation, and with Donald Trump calling her an enemy of the people, and with other conservatives like Mark Levin and Sean Hannity always harping on her, you know, they think it's all humor and this is the boys enforcing the boys club. But in her world, every single day is her looking through a threat assessment folder and going, which one of these guys is going to be the one that actually kills me today? And that is something that we shouldn't allow to happen. Right. Now, let's go into one final story. And we've got about three and a half minutes here to cover it, because I kind of wanted to end up on a little bit of a good note. Traditionally, corporations in the United States, especially corporations like MyPillow and such, haven't been the most socially progressive entity. But as of late, a couple of companies have jumped on a little bit of a, hey, let's get with the times bandwagon. And as recently as this week, Gillette, the razor company, released an ad showing a trans individual going for a shave. Chris, a lot of people are clamoring that this is so scary that we're showing these things to our kids. But do you think it's about time that commercials actually include everybody?
We see that. I mean, for example, the commercial about, for example, going to Disney World. You see traditional families with a male and female, then you see two gentlemen who happen to be gay with their children. So we're seeing it now more than ever because, look, last I checked, they work too. They go to vacations like anybody else. You shouldn't exclude people. You should embrace them, especially from just a bottom line perspective. They have money too. So do not get to a point where I don't want any gays. No. They got cash. They have credit. You know, they want to go and hey, look. Again, when you stigmatize people, put a label on them, you're already doing a disservice. So when you see these new ads, the Gillette you just mentioned about the transgender young man shaving with his father. I've known people who came out to their parents and their parents kicked them out the house and never talked to them again.
Yeah.
It is great to see the commercial because it deals with truth and fact that you have a father and son who obviously accept for his son for who he is, and they're having a moment, which is a rite of passage, because my dad and I did it, having the opportunity to show you how to shave.
Yeah, you know? And here's the thing, because this week I also learned that going around the internet, if you get a chance, you have to catch the story of what happened when one neighbor realized that she moved in beside two gay men, unknowingly engaging in what she called a full-out charm war offensive. Apparently, the big gay agenda is if you move to their neighborhood, they flood and inundate you with invites to dinner parties, they loan you tools that you may not have, and they take you out for wine brunches. So, terrible world they want to create. Chris, we gotta go. Where can people find you?
Find me on Facebook.com, Chris Bay, C-H-R-I-S. B is in broadcasting, A is Z. Find me there.
Yep, as for me, find me wherever good times are had, because that's it for this week. Till next time, love you, mean it. Gate and bye.